Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you're tuning in from. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased you are all here with me today. We've got a wonderful show in store for you, as we always do here on the Conscious Consultant Hour. We start off the show, as we always do, with a little blog post that I wrote a couple of years ago, just kind of going in order. And this blog post is entitled, "There is always a choice, even when we can't see it." We've all had to face the unexpected. We live our life and then something happens. Something that just doesn't sit well with us. We wonder why it happened. Why do we have to deal with this now? It can feel disempowering or overwhelming. Yet if we give into those feelings, we lose our real power to decide how we will show up, how we will respond, what we will do about it. For ultimately, the lesson is not about the other person or the situation we find ourselves in. It is about our choice to move forward or stay where we are. We all can find ourselves in those situations. When we are dealing with a boss, a coworker, or a relative, their behavior feels unacceptable to us, yet we feel we are stuck with them. And while that may be true in some circumstances, it is not true in all circumstances. We can make many different choices to change the situation, to change things so they do not continue. It might mean confronting the person, or it could mean stepping away. Perhaps we need to limit communication or stop it entirely. There are always choices, usually more than we see in a moment. Yet ultimately, it is about honoring ourselves, doing what feels right for us in the moment. Even if we decide to do something different in the future, it is our choice, and no one can take that away from us. So what do we need to make a choice about what is challenging at the moment? How can you respond in a way that honors you? So I wrote this a while ago. After having trouble with a mentor I was working with at the time, and at the time, you know, it's funny. Sometimes we feel we don't have a choice and the choice is staring right in front of us. And my relationship with this particular person had been, you know, good and bad over the years. And so it was really, and we came to a head about something where we, you know, something that just we couldn't see eye to eye on. And finally, after all the years of working with him, I just like had to step away from that relationship. And it was a very difficult decision for me because he was like, up until then, Because it just there was no one else in the area to work with up until a short time before this happened. And so I just couldn't, I just finally like saw an option. So I, I you know, finally had to take a stance and say no, like I just can't do it. And it was really hard for me because the work in which this person had been mentoring me was really very important to me. And I've been through a lot with them, and it's kind of like after going through so much, I really like I didn't want to let go because it's like he put so much effort into it, and I've been through so many hard times with him, and he gave me such a difficult time on so much stuff. And even though really the relationship never really worked well, it's kind of like you put that much effort in, you don't want to let it go. And it really was challenging for me because, you know, I always felt I had no choice in working with him because if I wanted to be a facilitator in this work and I wanted to eventually graduate and work in this work, there was just nobody else around. I didn't see any other choice. My wife, she, God bless her soul, she was always like, there's always a choice. You can always do something. And I'm like, what the hell am I going to do? Who am I going to work with? And, but really what the choice was is that I never really stood up to this guy. I never really said like, no, this is unfair. This is not right. And really like stood up for myself to him. And then when this final argument came and we were just butting heads, I'm like, nope, that's it. I'm done. I'm going to somebody else. And that was because finally there was somebody else around that I could be mentored by. And like within a day or two, boom, I was gone. And that was my way of standing up for myself in the moment. But up until that time, I really couldn't see a choice. I couldn't see a way through or a way past this. Because there just didn't seem to be other choices. Yet other people I know managed to get past that kind of a challenge. And the truth is, if I had done something about it early on, you know, the whole thing probably would have been much different. And you know, yeah, I can make excuses. There was fear. You know, if I confronted this guy and he said no and kicked me out, then I wouldn't have anyone to work with. And, you know, all these stories I made up inside my head. But all those things were just so, were just inside my head, period. And that I'll never really know what would have happened had I stood up for myself. I never know what if. I actually did see a choice because there really was a choice. The choice was keep working with him or the choice was leave. And maybe I didn't have someone else to work with, but eventually I could have come back around. Like there were other possibilities that I just closed myself off to. So it's not that we don't have choices in difficult situations. It's that the consequences of those choices are ones we don't like. And really, it comes down to an option of sort of weighing whether the consequence that we don't really like that much, if it's worth it rather than keeping going in the situation or any of the other choices that might be available. And it's kind of interesting because when I reflected back on it, it's so funny how when I've worked with clients over the years and I've coached people, and they've said to me, "Oh, but I had no choice." And I'm like, "Did you really have no choice? Couldn't you have done this, that, this, or that?" And they're like, "Yeah, no, but how could I do that? I couldn't do that." And it's funny because when we work with someone who's not emotionally involved in the situation, who can see things more objectively, that person can see a lot more choices than we see for ourselves. And then that person can really show us where there are other choices. But when we're just by ourselves in the situation, without really out any guidance, it can really feel like we have no other choice. So for me, it was a big lesson that there's always a choice. That if ever I say to myself, I had no choice, that's a big red flag for me to say, wait a minute, is that really true? Or am I just limiting the choices because they're uncomfortable for me? And I really got to take a good look at the situation. And so that's what this blog post is really all about, a very personal one for me. But I hope one that my loyal listeners can relate to. And the title of this blog post again is "There is always a choice, even when we can't see it." And you can always find my blog at talkradio.nyc/blog. And I hope you find it. And as well, you can find it on my personal branded website, theconsciousconsultant.com. All right. So now, after much to do, it is my pleasure to welcome to the show speaker, podcast, fellow podcaster, mindset and embodiment coach, Drew DeRaney. During a 9-month span, Drew, the proud father of three, endured four faith-shaking life events that found him determined to find a better way to live. Through intense self-reflection and awareness, he realized that in order to be happy, he must adhere to his own standards of honesty, integrity, and truth. Drew found his purpose and mission in life, which is to empower others ready to make a change and do the same. Drew is now writing his own story instead of letting others write it for him. In his number one best-selling book, I'll Have What She's Having, Memoir of a Reformed People Pleaser, Drew shares his personal journey and redefines what it means to man up and to embrace our authentic self. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Drew.
Thank you so much, Sam. I'm grateful to be here and glad you're in my life, my man.
My pleasure. My pleasure, my friend. And thank you for coming on today. We just got a couple of minutes before our first break. So I'm just curious, would you mind sharing with our audience what were these four faith-shaking events that happened?
Absolutely. I guess to some people they can get through it a little more smoother than I. The first faith-shaking moment was my divorce. That was final in April of 18, but the precursor to that was I found out from my best friend that my wife was leaving me. So we went through 3 years of mediation, where I was
Wait, 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 wait.
uh-oh, here we go.
You found out from your best friend,
I
not
couldn't
from your
gloss
wife?
over that. Yeah, she called them him and his wife to let them know to look out for me. My ex-wife and I are both godparents of their youngest daughter, so I know she had the best intentions. But that he did contact me. At least I wasn't. I was still blindsided, but in a different way. So we went through 3 years of mediation to keep it out of the court system, and the divorce was final in April of 18. So to me, that was the first faith-shaking moment. That whole period, because I figured I could fix it. Second faith-shaking moment,
Quick,
6 months
one
later.
quick
Yeah,
question on
yeah,
that one
yeah,
before you go.
yeah.
So this was a when you found out about this, this was a complete surprise to you. Like you had no idea this was coming.
Yeah, and that goes into why I'm doing what I'm doing in the men's personal development space, because I kind of was living through life through the motion, going through the motions, and wasn't really aware. I had a very low self-awareness. Life puts things, and you just do A, B, C, and D, and you get through it, and you go to the next thing, and Yeah, I did not see it coming.
Okay.
I didn't wasn't aware of social cues and
Yeah,
well, I'm
gotcha.
the kind of guy you need to tell me right away, right?
Yeah.
Two by four upside the head. I don't take well to
Gotcha.
like beating around the bush and stuff. So yeah, I was
Okay, so number
kind of
one,
clueless.
what's number two?
Number two was I threw myself a 50th birthday party in October of 2018 to like kind of rise up and 10 days after that I was fired from my job at the hospital. Let me gloss over that. Could do that. That was
Okay.
fun. Yeah, that was I reported a HIPAA violation. I was let go 10 days later.
Yeah.
It was more the timing of me submitting it, not the fact that I did it. I didn't listen to the timing of it, and I just did it and thought it was right. And yeah, so I was gone 10 days later, and I was a man who my self-identity was tied to my family, my wife, and my job, which is a very unhealthy thing for a man to do, to tie your self-identity to external things. So I was a wreck. And then 10 days after that, there's something to do with 10 days after I got fired, one of my children had suicidal ideations. And that was rough. I started the victim and blame mindset. So I blame the wife for the divorce. I blame the boss for the firing. And now I'm blaming myself for this happening because, say, Drew, you took your eye off the ball. You were focusing on the other things and this happened. And then 2 months after that happened, my father unexpectedly got sick and he passed away in mid-January 2019. So that was the 9 months where you get hit with, your marriage, your job, your kid, and your father. And I was like, I'm done. Okay. Let me go. Everything I can handle? Nope, I'm done. So,
Oh
you know.
God. Yeah. I mean, they usually call it a 1-2 punch. That's like the 1-2-3-4 punch
Oh
that
my
just
gosh.
like
Yeah,
you
I
not
could
only
have
get a black
suffered.
eye from that, but lots of bruises all over
Oh
the
yeah.
place.
No, absolutely. So yeah, so
Wow.
those are my faith shaking moments.
Wow. And if that's not enough to shake anybody's faith, I don't know what is. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about what happened after all those faith-shaking moments and how you found your faith again.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yep.
All right. So, everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Drew DeRaney, author of the book, I'll Have What She's Having, Memoir of a Reformed People Pleaser. And we'll be right back in just a moment.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
And welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Drew Duraney, mindset and embodiment coach. So, Drew, you went through, I think, just about like the only thing you didn't go through was really a personal health challenge, because it's like I've heard stories from different people of them, you know, losing jobs and you know, losing parents and things like that. But usually the crowning top of it was then they hit some of their own like personal health challenges, and you didn't, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. But going through all of this in a 9-month period, basically in less than a year, your whole world got turned upside down. How did you find your way through that?
That's a good question. How did I find my way through it? I almost didn't. I talked about the self identity, which to me is low self trust, low self love, and low self trust, love, and respect. So I had kind of low about myself there, and just those other, the first two things kind of knocked it even lower. So I say when somebody has that low of a self-identity, one of those four faith-shaking moments, you're ready to cave in. It's a catastrophe, right? Mm-hmm. I had four. So, yeah, I thought about not being around. I thought about whether it was didn't have a plan for suicide. It was a thought, though. Certainly a thought was just staying in bed all day and kind of giving up. I had promised myself, Sam, that to be the best father I could be once I had children. And I have three kids. And they are my life. So I'd die for them and I'd live for them. And I knew that if I gave up and children emulate the behavior of their parents, that I would be doing something contrary to what I promised myself and promised my God I would do. And so I was going to live. And the way I was going to do it was to do what men are supposed to do, Sam, and you know this, right? We're supposed to suck it up, man up, don't show emotion, shun your support systems, and just fix it. And so that's what I did. And I knew, though, to find clarity of purpose in my life and to get to what I call the coping stage after a caving in stage, I needed that bridge. So that bridge to those two stages was the clarity of purpose in my life. And I knew, you know, I know that we find the answers from within. At that time, I knew I wouldn't find the answers from within. If I asked my head, my heart, and my gut, should I live? All three would have said no. So I couldn't listen to myself. I had to look outside of myself, and I looked into the eyes of my three children and my mother, and I said, right now, this is the clarity and the purpose in my life is to get through this and help them get through this. All right. Mm-hmm. Didn't really care at that point of getting myself through it. So I did what I did. And on the other side, I felt they were well off. They were okay. You know, I was a shell of myself. So I got them through it and I got me through it empty. And then, you know, the what's next question came up, and that was the next challenge.
Yeah. Thank you for your honesty, and thank you for really, it's understandable that anyone in that situation would consider giving up. Mm-hmm. Was there anything that happened during that time, a coincidence, a serendipity? I mean, something that just happened that just renewed your faith, or was it really just powering through it?
The faith piece, I mean, you know, I mentioned I also blame God for taking my dad. So I was still in a victim mindset. And, you know, my hope, I always wanted to start my own company. And what I do recall is the month before my dad got sick, he was healthy, 80-year-old, on his birthday, end of November. And we were at his house for birthday party. And when I was ready to leave, he said to me, "Hey, Drew, I want to tell you how proud I am of you." And I said, "Dad, I know you're proud of me. Why are you telling me that now?" He goes, "I don't know how the hell you're doing it. You know, first the divorce and then the job stuff. And now you're, you know, one of our kids, you know, the kid. And yet you're still there taking care of the other two kids. And you come here every day and check on your mother and me. I don't know how you're doing it." I do want to tell you, I know your whole life you wanted to own your own company. I always told you not to. My dad was with IBM for 35 years, and that's what you do. And so I followed suit. I was in healthcare for 24 years. He said, do what's going to make you happy, and your mother and I will support you no matter what. And I started crying and gave him a hug and a kiss, and I said, thank you, Dad. And that's when I started Profit Compassion. My intention was to start my own healthcare consulting company to educate caregivers on how to effectively communicate with patients and families to help them navigate the plan of care so they could leave the hospital healthier than when they got there. Truthfully, what's happening now in healthcare, patients are getting sicker after they leave. And I felt I could impact the industry stronger on the outside than on the inside. The thing is, Sam, when my dad passed away, when he died, I let my dream die because I had so many self-limiting beliefs. Mm-hmm. So I didn't start that company. So I had this LLC called Profit Compassion, which I called it Profit Compassion because we all can profit from being compassionate and we can all profit from people being compassionate towards us. I had it sitting there and then I get a cold call, which I never answer on my cell phone. And it was a company asking me if I wanted to buy a franchise. And so part of my people-pleasing skills, my rationalization came in. I said, oh, you know, I could buy a franchise. That's like having my own company. Yeah, I'll shell out 56 grand and I will just learn the insides and I'll do that. And I shunned away from healthcare because they burned me, or so I thought. So I bought a franchise. It was a business consulting, great business model. It was just helping companies save money, which is honorable. It's just not like what I was doing in the hospitals. And so I did that without knowing how to run a, you know, company. I mean, my ego and I had a fight and my ego won and said I could run a company. And, then COVID hit and I'm here looking at the word pivot, you know, and I'm like, okay, I'm supposed to hire these companies and no companies are open. And I'm in my New Jersey home, not being able to see anybody. What the heck am I going to do? So, you know, I had started to virtually network across the country and, you know, trying to be optimistic. And, what ended up happening next was this is the pivotal thing that started to give me faith is I'd always wanted to write a book and I never had the content. And now I knew I had content. So I was on a networking event. And I forget what, you know, where it was taking place, but I was virtual. And I met someone who was a book editor and she was out in Arizona and her buzz line was how to write a book in 90 days without writing a word. Right up my alley, Sam. So I jumped at that. We had a call. It ended up being the way the process was. It was over Zoom and we just talked. And in the background, Otter was there, which is that transcription thing. And it would take my words and put it on paper. So it'd be my words on paper and I then could re-listen to the recording and change my words and change the tone. It was wonderful. The pivotal moment was as I told my story and I told it to everybody, anybody who would listen, I started to heal myself from within. Hearing my voice, hearing my story with my ears, I started to heal and it was cathartic. And when I was on with other people, they'd start telling me stories and they say, Drew, I don't even know you. And I never told the story before. And they're crying and they say, I'm feeling better telling it. And, or they'd say, I haven't told a story in years. I thought I was over it. And I'm obviously not. And so midway through writing the book, I wake up one morning on a Saturday in August, 2022. And I said, oh my God, I know my purpose in life. It's to get men specifically to start opening their mouths, sharing their story, sharing emotions, and healing themselves from within. And so I walked away from the franchise. I breached a 10-year agreement. Thankfully, the franchisor, I basically transferred my clients to another franchisee, and the franchisor said that they respected me all along because they had known my story, and they were not going to do anything. They let me walk, and I immediately didn't know what to do. Now I had no income, no way to make money. Sold the marital home, and I ended up starting a men's group not knowing how to do it. And I realized I made that men's group for what Drew needed. And then I realized that I needed to do something else. I paused that, and then I went on my journey to all the stuff I'm doing now. I made a vow that I'm going to build a very strong foundation in my business so when I put heavy stuff on it, it wouldn't collapse like the franchise was. So I spent the better part of a year and a half up to now knowing I wasn't going to bring in money. I now have a solid foundation, and you know, you do the right thing through service and kindness and the money will follow. So in a long answer to your short question, my faith is now restored in God, because I realized he gave me so many opportunities that were right in front of me that because I hadn't practiced self-awareness, I didn't see them. Once I got did that self-awareness and the self-reflection, all of a sudden I started seeing things instead of barriers, they were opportunities. And I'm like, oh my God, this stuff was in front of me the whole time and I didn't see it.
And yeah.
So yeah, so my faith has been restored.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Kind of having choices that are right in front of us and not even realizing it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. I see a couple of my loyal listeners checking in on the live stream. Sanaya, glad the blog post resonated with you. And Patty, always grateful for you listening in and sharing the show. We're going to take another quick break. And so when we come back, let's talk a little bit about this book that you wrote. And I'd love to know like where that title came from and just, you know, what the book is really all about and how it's impacted.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
People. Okay, Drew?
Of course. Thank you.
Awesome. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with my guest, Drew DeRamy, author of the book, I'll Have What She's Having, Memoir of a Reformed People Pleaser. And we'll be right back in just a moment.
Hey, everybody. It's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will continue to be Frank About Health with all of you.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. So, Drew, you titled your book, I'll Have What She's Having, obviously an homage to that line in You've Got Mail. Why did you title it that?
Actually, it was the movie When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, When Harry Met Sally, right, right.
They were in a diner, and it was, was not the reason I named it that. However, it is funny, and I let people think that because certain, you know, the generation will love it. But the name of the book initially was going to be called How Do You Like Your Eggs? And it was like Finding Your Real Self. That's initially what it was. And when people asked me why I was going to call it that, it took me so long to explain it. People said, you're going to lose people. No one's going to go in a store and buy it. But how do you like your eggs? It came from while I'm writing the book, I had like an emotional breakdown, because when you're repeating all this stuff over and over again, it just adds more negative feelings to your brain and it anchors it and all that kind of stuff. And I told my editor I wanted to stop. And she goes, well, you know what? I think this is the good time to tell you to do this. Go watch the movie Runaway Bride. And I said, I already seen it. Why do I have to? She goes, just watch it. And that's with Richard Gere and Julia Roberts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one she's like has five fiancés and each one she leaves at the altar anyway. So I start watching it. So like a Friday night and I'm watching it. And she and my editor had said, pay special attention to when they talk about eggs. I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, just listen for the word eggs. I'm like, all right, fine. Long story short, Richard Gere, as a reporter trying to validate a story he wrote about Julia Roberts, finds all the different fiancés that were left at the altar by her and asks them the specific question, like, when you were dating her, how did she like her eggs? And the fiancé would say, well, she liked them scrambled, like me. And the fiancé too was like, well, over easy, like I, you know. So each one had a different like way to make eggs, and each time she had said those are her favorite eggs. So at the last scene was like, or second last scene, that's her in the kitchen cooking eggs, multiple different ways to find out which one it was really hers. And in the last scene, she yells out to Richard Gere, Benedict. And he goes, Benedict Arnold? And she says, no, Eggs Benedict. Eggs Benedict are my favorite eggs. And it hit me and I started crying. I realized what my editor was telling me. I've been a people pleaser my whole life. That when people would say something, I would say, well, I want them to like me. So maybe I'll just like the same thing they do. We have something in common. And I started thinking about all my decisions, whether it was my wife or dating or friends or jobs or anything. I was the agreeable guy, the nice guy, the one who, Drew, can you do this for me? Sure. Drew, what's your favorite color? And, oh, green like hers. It was just like, that's. So when I started telling that story, it was freaking too long. You know, just like now, it was too long. So when I had started that men's group, I had these eight tribesmen, I called, guys who had helped me volunteer to build this up. And I was talking to two of them. And when I told the story, they said, Drew, you're going to lose us. Tell us what the book's really about. And right, it's about, you know, being a people pleaser and always trying to do stuff for people and always having what they'll have. One guy said, well, how about call it? I'll have what she's having. And I said, well, yeah, that's exactly it. Because what would happen if I was at a restaurant, whether it was my wife or after divorce, on a date or friends, whatever, I'd always want to get, like, let's say the steak. And I'm holding the menu out and the waitress comes over and goes to the woman, what would you like? And the woman would say, I'll have salmon. Mm-hmm. And the waitress comes to me, sir, what would you like? And I'm about to say steak. And I go, I'll have what she's having. That sounds good. So that ended up, that is it in almost every aspect of my life. And then one of the other guys did it in a private chat. He said, how about Memoir of a Reformed People Pleaser? And I'm like, that's it. And so it's really that's how we came up with the title. It was, I'm glad I asked on the outside, the guys, like, what do you think?
Yeah.
It means more of who I am.
And so is the book the story of this 9-month period, or is really the book about your life?
It's both. I wrote it as the Drew of right now, educating the Drew of years past. And so what, I initially started like right before I met my wife. And that's kind of where it starts. But what I did in the background was I looked at every aspect of my life, and the years mean a lot to me, because I'll know what year I graduated high school, graduated college. So that helped me. So I did it in like more like every 5 years. And I thought about some big things that happened in my life during those 5-year increments and how I made my decisions and how I remember feeling at the time when I made a decision that it wasn't aligned with my whatever. And so what I did is I then took all those stages in my life. I thought about how I made the decision so I could kind of get some teaching moments. And I had a lot of patterns in how I made decisions. So it was like would have done if I had the tools necessary to make a different decision is how the book's written. So I kind of overlap each aspect of my life with some teaching moments, but I call them something different in the book. And so that's how it's kind of written. I'll tell a part of my life and then I'll go into the teaching moment.
Now, you mentioned a few times men's work and men's groups, and it's something that I've been seeing more and more lately. You know, there've been women's groups and support groups for women. There's personal coaching groups. What's different about men's groups? When you say men's work or men's groups, what does that really mean?
Oh, it means that men have been told how to act and behave and be for such a long time that it's turned into a brainwash. And so men have been told by society, you know, with all this toxic masculinity, all these made up terms, that we cannot be masculine, you can't be strong, provider, fixer, all this kind of stuff. And we've also been told it's not, it's a weakness to cry and ask for help and all that stuff. So we're being told, don't be who God created you to be. And also don't be this, you know, this other stuff. So it's like, who are we? Mm. What are the rules? What are our roles now? They're blurred. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't do this. I feel that the man has been isolated. And when you isolate a human being, they become inactive. And when you become inactive, you let other people write your story and you're not living. And I honestly believe, and it's not just our country, it's across the world, that men are in a precarious position right now because, for the most part, we don't know what our role is in society.
So it's really about men finding their way through to be men in today's modern world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I have this free webinar I do. It's called Get Over Yourself, How to Use the Caveman Formula to Overcome Self-Sabotage. And it's just an acronym of how I got through to go from caving in to coping to crushing it, because that's what I talk about in my book. Men in caveman times, men were the providers. They go out and hunt and get the food, and the women did everything else in the background and helped out with the family and all that. But the family was always together. And then as we've gone across years, like, the man has really not allowed himself to evolve to still be that strong strength of a person and master emotions. We've been taught to suppress emotions. And so that's why I do have the caveman formula. You know, it's in no particular order, but each behavior behind the letter is how I have created myself to really redefine what it means to man up. And that's combining strength with empathy and doing it in a certain way. So that's, I just think men are lost right now and it's time to evolve, but not evolve in the way that mainstream is telling us to evolve. Evolve in the way that we, our authentic self, feel we can evolve.
So with everything that's gone on and what you've learned and what you're trying to embody now, do you see your sons picking up on it because they're grown up in a different world? I mean, like, every generation, it's like a different world that we grow up in.
Yeah.
How are they responding to this idea of men's work and this idea of, you know, this other way of being as a man?
That's a good question, because I'm really concerned about the youth nowadays. And it was more compounded with COVID, with the isolation, and these kids nowadays, these generations, they aren't challenged to critically think. They're having challenges in society communicating well and thinking for themselves. And so that's what I've let my boys know, you know, that that is what I'm doing. I think my oldest son, Matthew, I believe he's proud of me because he's so far ahead cognitively. This kid is brilliant, and he comes up with things you wouldn't. He knows that I have been a weak man, that I allowed people to push me around and whatnot. And I believe he's proud of me for what I'm standing for. And he and I have some deep conversations. I mean, you know, it's wonderful. My middle guy, Nikki, he's a quiet guy. He doesn't like to really share his emotions and speak. And so he and I, you know, we'll work on that. But it's, I believe truly that I'm building my legacy, that when I'm not here anymore, my boys are going to respect the work that I'm doing because I'm putting service and kindness first and money second. And you know, when they were growing up, you know, I worked at hospitals, and for 5 years I was in Manhattan. So that commute was far. And I believe I put money first. And even though I said I'm family guy, I believe I was putting money first and the job first and staying, you know, and I really wasn't as present as I should have been for them when I was home with them. You know, not maliciously, but you don't realize you're doing it when you know, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. All right. It's time for us to take our last break. When we come back, I'm going to ask you, how do you stop being a people pleaser? And we'll see. We'll take it from there and talk about what's going on and what you're offering out to people now. Okay, Drew?
Absolutely.
Awesome. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be right back with our guest, Drew Duraney, to tie it all up in just a moment.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
So, Drew, the subtitle of your book is Memoir of a Reformed People Pleaser. Mm-hmm. So how do you go from being a people pleaser to being a reformed people pleaser?
All right. Well, you can reform everybody. I'm still a work in progress, like we all are. So I haven't crushed it yet. I'm getting there. So, all right. So you mentioned about not having a health scare during that 9 month period. I did have one back in 2007 when my wife, when we had our oldest son, Matthew, and my wife was pregnant with Nicholas. My wife and I both worked in a hospital in an operating room outpatient, and I was in materials management. She was a recovery room nurse, and I had a panic attack that we all thought was a heart attack. So I was brought out on a stretcher. I remember passing by her. She's crying, pregnant with with Nick, and I get brought to the hospital, and it was, you know, diagnosed as a panic attack. And so immediately, you know, it's the way our Western healthcare is, they don't go into like looking at the root cause of this. They think of the symptoms. So I was suggested to go see a psychiatrist and immediately put on antidepressants and anti-anxiety medications. And that's where it all started. And so fast forward to becoming the reformed people pleaser. In all the research I've done and the self-reflection and the self-awareness, you know, I realize, and I'm not a doctor, I'm not clinical, so don't quote me on medical stuff, although I've been close enough to hospitals and doctors and nurses to know I know what I'm talking about, is that when an individual is depressed, there's an issue with his past. And it's usually regret for the past. So working on myself, you know, I've been working with my psychiatrist to wean me off these pharmaceuticals. I have been able, through a lot of work the last 7 years, to replace my regret for the past with forgiveness. And it's forgiveness of myself for not having the decision-making tools at the time to decide any differently. Stop beating myself up. So I forgave myself, and I've learned to forgive others for the error of their ways. They do not know what they don't know. And so my past is now my past. We all have a past, and I know my past helped me grow to who I am now. So forgiveness was step number one.
Right?
And then now weaning myself off the antidepressants with my doctor. Number two, anxiety. Good old fear of the future, you know, think and grow rich. Napoleon Hill talks about the six basic fears. I've always had a fear of, you know, once I became an adult, the fear of poverty, fear, but it's mostly fear of criticism. What people think of me. That was my fear, and my anxiety, the future, the fear of failure, even the fear of success. So in order to combat my anxiety, you know, the first two chapters of Napoleon Hill's book are on desire and faith. I needed to have a purpose for something to look forward to, hope, instill hope. And I wanted to reinstill that faith in God, right? So desire is the first chapter in his book, and faith is the second. So I have successfully replaced the fear of the future with desire and faith.
Right?
And now I have successfully weaned off the anti-anxiety medication with my doctor.
Wonderful.
So now I'm not regretting the past, and I'm not afraid of the future. You got to live in the moment, Sam. And I had that blame and victim mindset. In order to combat that, I grabbed onto gratitude. Gratitude is huge. I'm grateful for not just my family and my health and my friends, but the fact that I can get out of bed, the fact that I can walk. So I started, like, you know, writing down every day 100 things I'm grateful for. And you can get down to the nitty gritty, man. If I'm grateful for a cup of coffee, well, I need a coffee mug to be grateful for, and my creamer, and where do you put the creamer? In the fridge. I'm thankful to have a fridge. And how about, you know, when you reach for the fridge, it's got a handle. I'm thankful for, I mean, really getting down to that. And so you think about what happens to your brain as far as anchoring things. You eliminate regret, victim and blame mindset, and fear, and you replace that with forgiveness, gratitude, desire, and faith. How that can transform a human being. And it did it for me. A lot of work, a lot of support from others, a lot of change in my belief system. We'll talk about a belief system too whenever you want. But, you know, we're in essence, most of our lives, we live in other people's belief system. We don't even realize it. So I have totally replaced my belief system, got rid of my self-limiting beliefs with all those four things I told you about. And I created a paradigm in my book called The Cope Paradigm, The Coming Through Stronger. The C is clarity of purpose. That got me from the caving in stage to the coping stage. That's that bridge. O is opportunities. Once I crossed that bridge into coping, I started seeing barriers as opportunities, mind shift change. The P is progression. The minute you can see barriers as opportunities, you start to take action and you start to progress, there goes my confidence starts building. And so does my trust and my respect for myself. And then the E is evolution. You evolve. The more small wins you celebrate when you're progressing, the more you evolve, And now I'm towards the end of the coping stage, and that final bridge is the evolution to the transformation, the crushing it stage. And that's more like the Abraham Maslow hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. So I'm not there yet, but I am taking people on that journey with me because I want to bring them there too. So that is what I did. And, you know, the human being has 70,000 or so thoughts a day.
Yeah.
So I'll have these negative thoughts coming in. But the key is just when you have a feeling, it's always related to a thought. And I stop that thought if it's a negative thought, so it won't take me down that rabbit hole.
So we just got a couple of minutes left. What's the Mindful Man movement?
The Mindful Man movement is really emphasizing to men, empowering men to be much more mindful. And my coaching practice really starts with really empowering men to acknowledge their thoughts. And that's all about finding their own identity. I want them to define and design their desired identity. And once we do that, we go for mastering emotions. And how we do it is we eliminate all those self-limiting beliefs that were tied to that identity. Let's get rid of those. Mm. And once a man knows who he is and where he's going, we start to help him write his own story. And that's all about leading with purpose. And so that is all what the Mindful Man movement is, acknowledging thoughts, mastering emotions, leading with purpose. And there's so many ways we can do that. And I want to take men one man at a time, man, and just bring them to who they can be their best self with inner peace. And that's what the Mindful Man movement is.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Drew, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing of yourself and your story. It's these kinds of conversations are the important conversations that I think need to happen more frequently and more publicly as well. If people want to learn more about you, get in touch with you, how do they find you? You know, where do they find you?
Absolutely. Thanks for asking. My website's prophetcompassion.com, or you can email me at drew@prophetcompassion.com. I do, you know, I host that free webinar about getting over self-sabotage third Thursday of every month. My website has the link to that. It's free. Mm-hmm. I host a men's group called Tribal Stoics Monday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern. Links in on my site too, and coaching practice. You can learn about that. I also host a podcast called From Caving In to Crushing It. You will just look that up. I'd love for you to listen. But anything you guys need, you have a question, just shoot me an email. I'd love to help anybody. I really can do.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much, Drew. Thank you so much for showing up, for the work that you do, and for being Drew.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate it.
You're so, so, so welcome. And of course, thank you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in each week. Without you, there is no show. And just a little reminder, if you missed any part of today's show, you can always catch the replay on talkradio.nyc and on all the major social platforms, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and on all the big podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, wherever you find podcasts, you can find the Conscious Consultant Hour. Thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget, later today, 5 p.m., it's Frank Harrison and his show, Frank About Health. And on Fridays, as always, we have our blocks of show with kicking off with Tommy DeMisa and his show, Philanthropy in Focus at 10 a.m., followed by Stephen Fry and his show, Always Friday at 11. And we're going to have some new shows starting on the network really soon. So if you have not yet, go to talkradio.nyc and sign up for our newsletter. Just click on the Join the Tribe button so you can stay informed of our schedule and the shows coming up. Thank you all for tuning in. We will talk to you all next week.
NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will continue to be frank about health with all of you.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your Conscious Consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Branku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.